Welcome to Cascade Church Podcast,
a church we hope is both safe to be and safe to grow.
Enjoy!
Good morning to you all. My name is Kurt. I'm a co-pastor here at Cascade. It's good to see you, all of you. It's always a full house for Easter. And we like to say that, like, all of you are, even if it's your first Sunday, you're all kind of a part of Cascade. But Easter's just the day that we're like, I mean, come on. We should probably show up to church today, of all days, right? And so the one thing that we want to do, because it's my favorite churchy thing, and I don't like to do a lot of churchy things, but this is a good one. I love a little call and response. Do you know what I mean? And not all of you are aware of the Easter call and response in church, and that's fine. We're going to coach you through it, and you're going to be a part of it if you want to. It's very exciting. So it's a very low key. I started off. And don't get too excited. Don't do it. You'll be alone, okay? I'm going to do He is risen. And then from your diaphragm, you're going to give it a He is risen indeed. And it's very exciting, okay? It's a real confirmation thing. All right. We're just hanging out. It's a nice little beautiful morning. All right. He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Man, it's so fun every time. And I don't know why, but these are the moments that are like, I think I could have gotten down with living in the 1920s. Just little things entertaining us forever. I mean, I figure, like, if you lived in the 1800s, you'd be like, Easter's almost here. We're going to get to do the He is risen indeed thing. This is what I love. This is what I love about this. All right, happy Easter to y'all. It's good to see you. If you are here and excited, I want you to lean into your excitement. It's great to be excited for Easter. If you're here this morning and you're nervous, I want you to get in touch with that nervousness. Yeah. You've been to some Easter services where you're like, what was that? And this may not be the exception. We're about to find out. But whatever you're coming into here, hold on to it. We're going to talk through it and work through it. And I hope the goal for this morning is we want to walk away with something on Easter Sunday that you can think about and you can integrate into your life and who you are today. That what we're here to observe is the power of the present moment, that we're alive here and now. And the story of Jesus, I think, is always inviting us into that. So to start this morning, we are going to look at a story of the resurrection in the Bible. We're going to read it. We're going to have it up on the screen so you can see. We're going to be looking at the one from Luke. And there's a line that I love in the Luke resurrection story that we're going to see. So we're going to be reading from Luke 24, verses 1 through 12. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to the hands of sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again." And then they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home, amazed at what had happened. A couple of things to note about this story, if you're not familiar with kind of what's going on here. The disciples, the followers of Jesus, they're all Jewish, and there is a very stringent observance of Sabbath. Shabbat, for our Jewish friends still today, where you don't do anything. And the timing of Jesus' crucifixion is that he breathed his last right before the beginning of Sabbath. And so basically they had to hurriedly take him down from the cross, wrap him in linen cloths, put him in the tomb, and then go home and not work from sundown on that day all the way until sunrise on the third day, right? So sundown, you have a whole day of doing nothing, not until sunrise of the next day could they go to the tomb and prepare his body, which is what the women were going there to do. here's what I love. Something I think is really helpful when we look at biblical stories isn't just to say, well, what do we understand what's written here, but to also look at what's not written here. If we're entertaining that the stories of the Bible, that the understanding of God is that God can show up in the world in any way that God wants to, then how God shows up is really interesting. It tells us things about the nature of who God is. So who does the resurrected Jesus, the resurrection, who are the very first witnesses? These women. Which is incredibly significant within that Roman culture because the women were the ones without power, low on the totem pole. They had a very clear hierarchy of who has power. So who does the resurrection show up to? Who does God show up to in the greatest reversal of fortunes, the greatest miracle that has ever existed? Who does God first show up to? To those that in the society have no power. They're the first witnesses. They're the heralds of this day. Now, as we talk through this, I am a lifelong Christian. I've done it my whole life. I was born in a church. I just like every time, not literally, hospital and everything. But like, I'm sure that my parents were the next Sunday after I was born, they're like, well, we got to get this kid in church. He was born a sinner. No time to waste. Let's get him in there. And so the number of Easters I've sat through and been a part of, I mean, I think this is my 42nd. I've really stacked them at this point. And there's a number of amazing Easters I've been a part of, and there's some very odd Easters I've been a part of. I don't think I'm going to do it, but there's a couple of Sundays where the pastor's out of ideas, and he's like, time to get theatrical. And you're like, oh, no. There's a joke that I think there's some truth in, that most pastors are just frustrated theater school dropouts. They're like, really want to put on a one-man show. And the biggest takeaway is, I was thinking this week, did any of you go to high school pep rallies? Like when you were in high school, you all were just at one this week. This is great. Some of you are thinking of the near past. Some of you are thinking of the very far past. But when you go to a high school pep rally, it's like you got to wear the clothes. There's big music. When I was in school, Jock Jams 97 was probably pumping through the auditorium. Nice. You would just be so excited. It's like, everyone stand up, let's cheer. And then like a team would run out and we're like, yay, our team. And everyone would like cheer and sing. And then we would end it with our school song, our alma mater. And then you would walk away and maybe you were like, that was awesome, no notes. If you're like me, you had a moment where you were like, what was that? I know that everyone got really excited and we were yelling and cheering while someone was spinning their head on a bat and then trying to run across the gym. But what was that? And sometimes that's how I feel about Easter Sunday. It's this big performance and thing and people are really excited and they're wearing different clothes and they're like, it's pastel day. And we're like, yay. And then you get in your car and you're driving home and you're like, what? Well, what was that? And sometimes the telling of Easter Sunday and the sacrifice of Jesus is like, before you were born, someone did the greatest thing that anyone can ever do for you, even though you had no choice in it, you had no awareness of it. And this is the day where you're supposed to say thank you for the gift that you were given. And you were like, I mean, I'm not appreciative of the God of the universe. But also, this feels odd. This feels like I was handed something. I wasn't quite sure what it was, and I'm supposed to do something with it. What is that? I name all those things because maybe you're feeling them, maybe you're not. That's great. But I think that the resurrection and the story of Jesus actually has a lot of practical application to each and every day we live. I actually think it's one of the hallmarks of who Jesus was in his ministry is that he's always inviting us into this moment, here and now. I want to run through a couple of examples I think illustrates how Jesus was always inviting us to now. not just to reflect on a victory from the past, not to just think about a future glory that might exist sometime, maybe after I die, but right here and now. A couple of my favorite stories. In Matthew 15 and 16, Jesus creates bread out of nothing. A couple of loaves, a couple of fishes. There's a feeding of 4,000 people. It's this incredible miracle where everyone's fed. And they're fed so much that actually they send around baskets afterwards to pick up the leftovers. And they have 7 full baskets of leftover bread. And then Jesus with the disciples is like, great, let's do this now. Let's go over the Sea of Galilee. Let's take the ship to the other side of the sea. And when they get there, the disciples say, oh no, we forgot the bread. Which is the most relatable thing ever. I can't tell you how many times I've shown up at someone's house or with my kids at a children's birthday party, and you're like, oh no, we forgot the gift. And when they're like, Jesus, we forgot the bread, Jesus tells them, he's like, you know what, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees. Which is like a cryptic, kind of weird thing to respond to a lack of gluten in the room. What Jesus is saying is like, while you're thinking about the bread, yeast is this thing that gets within the bread and it spreads all over. And what he's pointing to in this story, I believe, is the Pharisees had a way of, it got into all ways of living that people with power, people in roles of power, got to decide how everyone else has to show up and who belongs and who doesn't. And he's like, that way of being infiltrates every aspect of our life and our world. Beware of that thing. And the disciples go, ah, Jesus is really mad about the bread. That's literally in the Bible, and it's my favorite. Is that Jesus, like, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees. Like, Jesus will not get off this bread thing. We said we're sorry. And Jesus goes, are you still talking about the bread? Were you not there when I just made bread appear for 4,000 people? I think we're good. I think we're good on the bread front. What Jesus is doing is he's using the thing that happened to pull him into this moment. You just saw this miracle. You saw this thing. And there's going to be a temptation for you to use your proximity to me and the miraculous things to start gatekeeping for other people. Let's not do that. We've already moved on from the miracle. The idea isn't that Jesus would do something miraculous and then they would just do victory laps on that for a couple of weeks. And really chop it up into some reels and make sure that people wouldn't forget. Like, let's share this with your friends. Maybe get the word out about the bread miracle. Jesus was like, that happened and we're moving on to something else. In 16, in Matthew 16, the very next chapter, Jesus asks the disciples, who do you say I am? And Peter says, you're the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the one that's going to lead us forward. And Jesus is like, yes, awesome, great. And then next, he's like, hey, I'm going to have to suffer and die. This is who I am. And Peter's like, no way. I'll never let that happen. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. That is a brutal reversal of good boy, bad boy in like just a couple of verses. That he nails this thing that no one else sees. And then he immediately says, well, I understand what being the Messiah means. And that means we win and we keep on winning. And Jesus says, no, that's actually not what's going to happen. And I think that exhortation that get behind me, Satan, is what he's saying is Satan is another way of saying there are temptations to do things in ways that hold up your power and are good for you, but they may not be good for others. And what he's saying is you need to let go of that thing because he wasn't just doing victory laps on his recognition that he was the Messiah. There's a new moment that you have to show up to now. There's something happening now that I don't want you to miss. Next, we have the transfiguration. Jesus appears before his disciples and starts glowing. And not like a glow-up skincare treatment. Like he is glowing, dazzling clothes. And he shows up with 2 of the greatest heroes of the Jewish story. They immediately recognize. And when Peter sees this, he goes, we need to make shelters here and now on this hillside. We shouldn't leave this moment. And Jesus says, nope, time to head down the hillside. We're already heading back into Jerusalem. This incredible moment is great. Let's be in it. Let's recognize it. And now it's time for something else. Now we're moving somewhere else. The reason why I think that's interesting is what I'm proposing to you this morning is that Easter, for people that are interested in understanding who is Christ, what is God, and showing up, if it's nothing more than a victory lap of something that happened 2,000 years ago, we might be celebrating Jesus while entirely missing who Jesus was. If the resurrection doesn't mean something for today, then I don't know that it's Jesus' resurrection. It might be Christianity's resurrection, where we're trying to reinstate all we do is win. And that's who we are. But we're missing where Jesus is inviting us to here and now. Something that's deeply tied, and I think needs to be acknowledged on Easter Sunday, is that there is no resurrection without death. There's Good Friday within the church calendar. A name which has, you know, a complicated history. I don't think Jesus would be pumped on us calling his crucifixion day Good Friday. I think he'd be like, I have a couple notes. How about Somber Friday, honestly? There's the death of resurrection, the death of Jesus that we acknowledge on Friday. And then there's resurrection on that Sunday. The death of Jesus invites grief for us to mourn. And here's the definition of grief that I found to be incredibly helpful throughout my life. Grief is mourning the loss of the tomorrows we imagined. When someone in our life dies, part of what we're mourning is that we know, we imagined what life would look like with them tomorrow. We thought we knew what life would look like and how people would engage and how they would show up. Almost exactly 1 year ago, we lost my father-in-law. And when my father-in-law passed, there's an experience of my children, my boys, that they would have with their grandfather that I have to mourn and let go of. It's a tomorrow that I imagined that's not going to happen. And it's brutal. It's gutting. We get connected to these tomorrows that we imagined. We think that what yesterday was is what tomorrow will be. And it's horrific to sit in a place where we have to surrender that and let go of that. Here's another grief that I don't think gets talked about enough. Sometimes really good things happen in our lives. Sometimes you fall in love and you meet someone and you start dating and maybe someday you get married. There's a tomorrow that you imagined of singleness that you should probably put in the grave. Sometimes we get job promotions and we're in a job that is just sucking the life out of us. And we leave that place to step into this new job. And everyone's like, isn't that so exciting? Yes. But it also represents a loss. Grief of the tomorrow we imagined of what we knew what tomorrow looked like at this other job. It might have been terrible, but at least we knew what it was likely to look like tomorrow. And what often doesn't get talked about is the fact that there is grief also attached to the best parts of our lives, as well as the most hard, difficult parts of our lives. A part of Easter is experiencing grief and recognizing that there was something that went in the tomb with Christ on Good Friday that did not come back out again at resurrection. I think a lot about the tomorrows that the disciples imagined with Jesus that did not come back out of that grave. There's a story they told themselves about who Jesus was and what it was going to be like to be with Jesus that was shattered on that day. And it has to be grieved. It has to be put in the tomb so that they could show up to the resurrected Jesus. If they showed up to the resurrected Jesus the same way they were showing up to the Jesus that went in the tomb, they would have missed him. They would have missed it. The reason why I love doing the Luke version of the resurrection, my favorite line, I hope you caught it, was what the angels say to the women when they come to the tomb. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? I bet they practiced it. That's a great line. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? There's something new happening here that you're going to your place of grief, and if you stay here, you're going to miss it. I also think the brilliance of that line is that the inverse is true too. Sometimes we go looking for the dead in the place of the living. An example of that, I think Peter and the other disciples, you could have said to them as they were gathered together away from Jesus while he was being crucified, why are you looking for the dead among the living? There's a death you need to go be present to. There's a death and a loss you have to go see and be a part of. And I think that's part of what Easter is, that dual invitation. Don't look for the living among the dead, and don't look for the dead among the living. An illustration of that, sometimes where we look for the living among the dead or the dead among the living. The first Sunday of Cascade, it was about 9 years ago. And a little bit of the story of how we got started. I think maybe we had like 25 people on a little email list on like, we're starting a church. I don't know how you do that, but we're going to find out together. And the first Sunday, when we had like of that mailing list of 25, maybe in like our three little previous gatherings, we had like 15 show up. And we're like, we're almost disciples. This is so fun. Our first Sunday, we had like 100, 120 people show up. And it was wild. It was not what I was anticipating based on what had happened. The tomorrow I imagined was not what I was facing. And one of the people that was helping us get started, he called me that next morning and he was like, isn't that great? Isn't that exciting? And I was like, how many of those people are going to be there in a year? How many of those people are going to keep showing up to Cascade? Sure, great, that one Sunday. And he said this line that's similarly angelic, where I'm sure he's practiced it. He said, if you only celebrate the things that last forever, have fun never celebrating anything. Whew, that's a good line. See, the problem was that I was showing up to a kind of resurrection. The tomorrow I imagined wasn't happening. There was a bunch of people that had shown up that day, and I would rather be hanging out in tombs than I would be showing up to the life that was happening in the room. Some of us love tombs. Some of us love to be in grieving. Here's what I found if you're a perpetual griever. If you're on the floor, there's nowhere to drop to. If I'm preparing myself for the worst, isn't it great all those people showed up? I don't know, no one might show up next week. And then no one shows up next week? Guess who's hurt but not surprised? This guy, huh? Yeah, it's a real bummer. But at least I wasn't surprised by it. You know me, I always see the awful thing coming down the road. Do some of you relate to this? Some of you are showing up to graves and there's resurrection. Now, some of you have never seen a grave in your life. And you're like, I don't know, it could be worse. It's always going to be great. You could have the worst day ever. Like a car will get a flat. You'll be out in the rain trying to change it while someone's vomiting in the back seat. And you're like, well, at least the plants are getting what they need today. And you're like, woof. I mean, why are you looking for the dead among the living? Why are you looking for the living among the dead? It's okay to show up to this moment. It's okay to show up to the realities that are happening right now. And a story that helps me remind myself and ground myself that let's show up to this moment, the thing that is showing up here right now, was there is a number of Sundays ago. It was St. Patrick's Day, which is on a Sunday. And if you're from around the area, it was Shamrock Run Sunday. Shamrock Run is always around St. Patrick's Day. It's always on a Sunday. And I was at a church that I used to work at. It was a larger church. And during the day, the person who was the pastor who was going to be preaching the message heard, he was like, hey, where is this person? It's like, oh, they're at the Shamrock Run. And then he heard that two more times about other people. And he had a message planned for that day, but let me tell you the message he preached. It was about the lack of commitment people had to church and that they would rather go run around at Shamrock Runs than they would show up at church on Sunday morning. They were more excited about exercise and wearing green tights than they were about Jesus Christ. And do you know who he preached that message to? The people who showed up to church instead of the Shamrock Run. All told, maybe 40 people weren't there because they were at the Shamrock Run. But at that church, it was a large church, and that service, probably 400 people in the room. He was preaching to the 40 people that weren't there, not the 400 people that were. And I think that's what it means to look for the living among the dead and to look for the dead among the living. Some of us are showing up and we're living our lives for people that aren't in the room. How many times have you experienced some moment of yourself where you are living your life for a parent who lives across the country, not your partner, your children, your friends, or your coworkers who are in the room with you? Some of us are showing up and living out the entirety of our lives for people that have deep control over our lives, but they aren't with us. And people have to show up. Do you know how painful it is to sit in a room of people being chastised for not doing something they are actively doing at that moment? Yeah. And I think we know in our own lives it can be painful to live out of places, live into versions of ourselves that aren't true. Sometimes there's parts of ourselves, there's voices in our lives that we need to put in the tomb. We need to put in the grave. We need to surrender the control over the tomorrows we imagine so we can show up to the tomorrows that are happening, the todays that are happening. Part of what I would love for you to do, and we have a couple of them out there. It's a bit of an adult Easter egg hunt, if you will. We have little green pieces of paper in some of the pews where the books are. The books. It's embarrassing. I'm a pastor. They're hymnals and Bibles. There's little green tombs, the little pieces of paper. And there's pencils out there. I'd love for you to grab them. If you're sitting directly in front of them, you didn't sign up to be the pastor outer, but surprise. I'd love for you for people to hold on to those. Or if you have a pencil in front of you, sometimes it can be helpful to see and visualize this as it impacts your own life. I told you some stories that helped me to remind myself of when I'm showing up to things that aren't true. I know there are times where I preach messages here to versions of Christianity that aren't happening in the room and aren't a part of your reality. Some of us are showing up to Christianities that actually aren't a part of our lives anymore. And so sometimes it can be helpful to write down. Some of us, when we're showing up to relationships, when we're showing up to past parental wounds, when we're showing up to other jobs we used to have, or wounds that we've had in our friendships, sometimes it can be helpful to write that on the stone of that piece of paper. What is the death I need to observe? What's the tomorrow that I imagine that is not coming? Now, I want to be very clear that we should know this if you're part of the Easter story. Not everything you put in the tomb stays in the tomb. The power of recognizing and putting it in the tomb isn't that this reality will never come back, but for me to show up to the next reality, I do have to surrender it for right now. I do have to let go of this relationship, this job, this hope, this dream, this part of my life that used to be but is no more. And then attached to that is what's the resurrection that I should show up to? See, when we surrender a tomorrow we imagined, that's what opens the door for another tomorrow to show up that we didn't imagine. And how do I prepare myself to be aware of that? How do I show up in the same way that Jesus was inviting the disciples to show up to this moment? Stop thinking about the transfiguration because there's a new thing happening now. Stop showing up to the feeding of the 4,000 because there's a new thing happening right now. There are new things happening in your lives right now. And the invitation of Easter and Resurrection Sunday is that you get to bear witness to it. You get to be like the women at the tomb, seeing that the tomb is empty and that there is new life springing up. my invitation for you is that if you know that you're a person that prefers tombs to resurrection, spend a little bit more time thinking about resurrection. And if you're a person that loves resurrection and isn't a huge fan of the tombs, maybe spend a little bit more time thinking about what's the death that I need to observe. Would you pray with me?
Thanks for listening.
We hope you're able to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. in person.
Have a great day.